Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast series. Join me, your host Richard Reid, as I take a tour around the world in search for coaching in education stories from the field. In this series, I'm taking things a step further from the training room to investigate what life in school is really like when trying to introduce a coaching culture. As a school leader and coach, I'm keen to find out what happens when theory and good intentions meet reality. In our previous episode, I took a virtual trip to Kohia Terrace School in Auckland, New Zealand, where I had a fascinating conversation with Principal Alison Spence about their coaching journey. And for this episode, I'm taking a jump across to Australia to McGregor State School in Queensland, where I'm joined by their Deputy Principal, Janice Leonarducci. Janice started her teaching career back in 1988 and over time developed a keen interest in curriculum leadership, particularly coaching in maths in the early days. Janice then moved into a regional position as a principal education advisor, where she was able to further develop her coaching approach as she supported schools with their professional development. In 2018, Janice was appointed deputy principal at McGregor State and initiated their coaching journey in 2019, starting out with just two coaches. To expand on this and help build capacity within the staff, Janice made effective use of available training on the impact cycle, which supported the school's coaching framework. Janice, this sounds like a great journey to share. Thank you for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you, Richard. It's great to be here and have the conversation.
Janice, to put things in context for our listeners, I want you to go right back to the start of your own coaching journey and share with us a little of how and where your interest in coaching began.
So, as a teacher, obviously, I think all teachers are inspired by someone in their career, and I certainly was as well. I had a deputy who saw some leadership potential and saw my love of curriculum, and then I worked with her in a curriculum leadership position. Then the advertisement for a maths coach came along, and I took that opportunity to step away from that school and work in another school in that area. So even though I was passionate around coaching, I was passionate around working with teachers to help them build their capability and obviously for student outcomes eventually. So that's where my love for coaching and working with adults certainly came from. It was during that time that, a real love of professional learning, learning in research, learning alongside teachers was built. And I certainly discovered Jim Knight's, one of his first books, that High Impact Instruction, that was prominent in a lot of my work with teachers.
Super. And it's interesting, even right from the very word go, Janice, you were very much curriculum focused, so coaching, but specifically within the curriculum, which is quite interesting. And you had maths as the first focus of that.
Yes, that's correct. It definitely was curriculum based, and I guess in our schools we're looking for improvement, obviously, and engagement, and that pedagogy in the classroom. So even though I had a passion for maths and all things maths and being very practical and hands on in the classroom, it really was around that pedagogical approach to teaching and engagement of students.
Yeah, I think you mentioned a couple of really key words there, Janice, when you mentioned school improvement. And I think for listeners, I think that's what a lot of people are keen to hear is, what will the outcomes be of all of this, professional development and, I suppose, investment in time and money. And if they can see school improvement, be that for staff, practice or pupil outcomes, then definitely we're going to get people hooked to listen a little bit more. Janice, as with many new initiatives in schools, and you mentioned coming in as a maths coach, there are always pockets of resistance within the staff. Can you share with us some of the initial challenges of introducing the idea of coaching to the staff at McGregor State, and how did you overcome this?
Absolutely. There are always barriers to any new change, and that was the same. Well, it's the same everywhere, isn't it? As soon as you mention something, I think it's about the mental models that people have. So as soon as I mention the word coaching, everyone has their own mental model of what that might look like and what that means, including the leadership team, including teachers, to think that, do I need to be told what to do? I'm a good teacher, I'm a good operator presently. So that was the case as well at McGregor. Teachers thought that's right, they're great, I don't need to learn anymore. So it was building that culture of learning first, that we're all lifelong learners, that we all can improve. And I guess that's why I don't like the word expert, because if I believe nobody's an expert, because they're still learning. And I learn from all teachers, early career teachers to experienced teachers. So it was building that trust, I guess, and that culture of learning first. So yes, I worked very hard in attending all meetings, corridor conversations, any opportunity I had to dispel what the instructional coaching was and wasn't. And it wasn't supervisory. It was about partnerships and relationships and walking alongside. So yes, that took a lot of work, a lot of groundwork. And I think it's really important that you spend the time to do that first, however long that takes. And that was really important. A lot of meetings, a lot of leadership meetings, as well as a lot of staff meetings. Any group of teachers meeting together in faculties or year-level teams, I would be there to answer their questions and to dispel some of the chit-chat behind the scenes around it and to be open and honest in my conversations with them. I think that's really important. And sometimes we have to take the time to do that. And I think that's what we don't do well in schools sometimes. We rush too quickly.
Absolutely. I'm right with you on that one. And I think you're absolutely right when you talk about taking the time. And sometimes, like you say, we're very quick to rush these things. Sometimes we think taking the time means a couple of weeks or maybe just one term when it comes to a new initiative. But something as significant as coaching in education, when you're talking about attending a significant number of meetings, I'm assuming that's in the roll-up to actually rolling out coaching in education so that you can answer those questions. So would that be, you know, a significant period of time that you're actually meeting with people prior to introducing an initiative like that?
Absolutely. Well, introducing it and then unpacking it. And yes, it took at least a term. So in that time, during the time that I had to employ some full-time coaches and do the groundwork, that's the time I was, meeting with everyone and talking about it. I think another thing that was really clear, I wanted to make really clear with them initially, was it was voluntary. All right, we weren't telling anyone who to coach. It was totally voluntary, and that helped as well. And then I think they took a back seat then to realise that and then to listen and understand the process. And there were questions even about what does a full-time coach do? What do they do all day? So we had to really unpack that. Once I got the coaches on board, we had to unpack what their role and job description looked like as well. It was really transparent. Everyone on staff knew what was happening, the reasons why it was happening, and the outcomes, and that's really important. And I guess the best reward ever was when I first put that EOI out to staff, and we go, right, let's go, who's interested? And out of 50 teachers, 23 teachers put in EOIs to say they were interested. So that showed me that the groundwork had been successful, absolutely. And of course, we couldn't coach everyone at once, so then it was about determining the strategic direction of who was coached and how that looked, because the important thing as well is sharing that success. So we wanted to coach people initially, but we didn't want to turn people off, and we wanted to share the success that they found through the coaching experience.
I think that's going to be really helpful to listeners, especially people who are at the very start of their coaching journey. Knowing that time scale and knowing that, I think that key word there of voluntary is absolutely key, so that people feel this is something they can dip into and see what they think initially. And obviously there were a few flag flyers in there that were really pushing it for you as well. But for people to feel that they're not being forced into something, and I know talking to Alison in the previous episode, that idea of establishing those relationships, that those relationships were key to begin with. And in place, you know. So I think that's really helpful to folks that are listening to think about the time scale there, that it's not something that you can just jump into straight away. And that was a great take up, you know, whenever you put out the initial word as to who was going to be interested. That was fantastic. I think that's terrific that you're being able to share early successes, because that's really spreading the word and convincing maybe those people who were still on the fence at that stage.
And the other thing is outcomes of coaching, especially instructional coaching around classrooms and pedagogy and student engagement and goal setting, are different from class to class. So it was really important, just like I shared what coaching looked like initially, it was really important that those folks shared at all meetings what they got out of coaching, what they and it was often, you know, like I said, even goal setting and student engagement. So that's important, absolutely, to share the successes, as important as the foundations.
Yeah, yeah. I like that idea that different people were getting different things out of it, because that's going to encourage people more to participate, because they're not just fitting into one mould, I suppose. And a lot of initiatives are like that, you know, where everybody will do the same thing, follow the same process to achieve the same outcome. But I suppose that little bit of creativity and independence where people can get out of it what, you know, it's going to be different from one person to the next, and actually being able to articulate that at meetings, that's really useful to encourage people.
The coaches need agency. I firmly believe that too. They need agency to make some decisions around that. In our Queensland schools, we have an improvement agenda, and we try to be quite precise around what that was. And for us, it was around reading and English. So as long as they're on that journey with us, how that looked for each one of them was a little bit different. So that was important too.
Yeah, yeah, super. Yeah, you mentioned the Queensland, the improvement agenda. Obviously, McGregor State had decided to target the improvement of reading standards. Can you share with us a little, Janice, how coaching has impacted on teaching practice to help achieve this target? And also, what has been the impact on the standard of pupil reading?
Sure, we had some great results. So we used a gradual release of responsibility, the Fisher model around that. So it was, again, like the improvement agenda was around English and reading, it was around, well, what else? What is our pedagogical framework when we use the gradual release? And it was also about what our school system had as resources and programs within the school to assist teachers to get these outcomes from students. So we use a formative assessments of Fontes and Purnell. And of course, we have their summative assessments when they get an A to E rating at the end of the semester. So they were our standards of measurement. The other thing I want to make clear around the improvement too, and this is where the great success came from, I learned in the regional work around measuring your impact as an educator. So I was fortunate enough to devise a survey initially at the initial stages of the coaching journey for staff, because it's hard to measure staff's impact, the coaching impact on staff. Their change in their pedagogical practices, their knowledge of the gradual release of responsibility, their knowledge of how to teach reading. So we did an initial survey, so that's how we measured. And then at the end of the 12 months, we followed that survey up. So that was around the 42% of improvement of teacher practice in the classroom of those that were coached, which was a great outcome. Also, the student outcome was around those formative reading measures as well. We had pre and post measurements of that. We had to keep the focus, and that's what's different, I guess, around the instructional coaching. It's alongside their learning, the educational outcomes for students, but also the learning for teachers as well.
I think for anybody listening, when they can see for themselves, you know, firsthand evidence that pupil improvement actually happens, we're all in the teaching game to improve pupil outcomes, and anything we can do to improve our own practice as teachers that will then have an immediate impact on the learning outcomes of the pupils has got to be listened to, and something that's getting those sort of results that you talk about is fantastic. And you mentioned the term 12 months there, so the idea of sending out, you know, a bit of a survey at the start, and then you're thinking then realistically of running a 12 month period, which is a reasonable period of time before you get any sort of results back in. So is that the sort of time scale then you'd be advising schools to think about as far as initial results and measuring outcomes would be?
Well, the 12 months, I think, was really important for the teacher practice and I guess the delivery initially of this. Obviously, for students, we want to measure their learning much quicker than that. And I guess for that formative reading, it was like a bit of a six-week cycle, because you try different strategies as well in the coaching and you want to see improvement and outcomes fairly quickly. So I wouldn't wait 12 months for student improvement, but the initial coaching project, it was a great measure of that 12 months to see that success. But for students and teachers themselves, because the actual coaching cycle itself only went for 4 to 6 weeks for each teacher, depending on what their coaching requirements were. So even though we had those small cycles of data, we then measured the whole initiative over the 12 months. So I certainly would encourage a big initiative to be checked in, and that's part of the review cycle, is to go back and see what worked, what didn't work. And we've been on that journey as well, because we've changed it a little bit since then too.
And it's nice for teachers, if you're talking about a 4 to 6 week period, to know that, you know, at the end of each period, they're going to get a chance to review and change and tweak, and have that flexibility and, I suppose, a bit of autonomy then to say, well, if that didn't work, we'll maybe try something slightly different. And that's where coaching really comes into itself, giving the opportunity to have those conversations, you know, in a safe environment where they can take risks with suggestions and they can try things out. And you talked about that idea of agency, and I think across the whole staff, with a whole school, if they can develop that approach, ultimately you're going to see improvement in pupil outcomes. I think it's fairly natural and fairly inevitable. You mentioned earlier on there, Janice, that you talked about this idea of not being a big fan, and I think this is great, not being a big fan of the term expert in schools, but you really prefer this concept of partnerships. So tell us again a wee bit about how coaching has really supported the whole idea of a partnership approach to professional development in your school.
Absolutely. I relationships are everything, I believe, and that's how you build trust. And like you say, you mentioned Richard, in that safe environment, that's really important. So obviously Jim Knight's work we follow, and there are partnership principles within that. So I can't say that enough around coaching. If you don't have that relationship and that trust, I don't think the growth would be as big, absolutely. Haven't mentioned even the power of video. And the use of that. But again, the use of that within watching your own self. It's about watching yourself being the teacher. I don't know if you've seen yourself teach, Richard, but I certainly have. And you pick up things straight away. You don't need someone to tell you things. You just go, wow, I didn't realize I said that or I did that. But that's a good thing. So sometimes, you know, even videoing is your own coach. But yeah, the relationships is very important, I think. There's nothing without that relationship. And I think being in schools, that's so important. The relationship you have with students, the relationship you have with parents, it's certainly a community. And it's the same if adults are going to have any growth and improvement, they need that deep relationship and trust first. And sometimes that might not be coming into the classroom straight away. That might be conversations about the work. So I think it's important that leaders identify that as well, that they don't instruct coaches to be so demanding of teachers. I think it's about taking their time. Again, we mentioned time. It does take time to build those relationships and trust, and we have to value that and value every step of that relationship. Every relationship's not going to be the same between coach and coachee as well. So it's about being empathetic and valuing that relationship.
If we think about, I mean, there's been a terrific success level already, and I'm throwing an extra question in here, when it comes to mind. Moving forward at your school, Janice, how do you see things moving forward, even across the next 12 months and beyond? What are your sort of hopes and aspirations for coaching and education at McGregor State?
Well, we're looking at obviously upskilling more teachers now, that and budgets change and priorities change a little bit over the years. And the focus now is around upskilling lead teachers in the coaching, so that they might be able to come off class one day a week or so. So we're looking at building that capability across the whole school. It's quite a large school. There's 1,300 students, 50 teachers. So it's about how can we best cater for all of our teachers across the school, and I think that's really important. The other thing I want to mention too is building that capability up across school teams. It's been said that the best professional development is for a teacher is often the teacher down the hallway or the teacher next door. So part of this initiative, there was two other things involved, and that was about watching others work. So we about opening classroom doors and letting other people see things in practice, and teachers were becoming better at that with that culture of learning that they were happy to share, especially when we can identify successes. Teachers don't sometimes realise that they do something really well, and they need coaches to come in and say, wow, that's awesome. Let people come in and see that in action. You know, that other people need to see that and learn from that. So I think that sort of culture is important to build. So we're continuing to build that up about sharing practice across the whole school, because we have so many excellent teachers within the school that the teachers don't get to see because they're so busy in their own classrooms. So that's what we're looking at, is building the capability of coaches across each of the year level teams.
I think that's fundamental. And you're right, you know, when you look at your own school, there is so much talent and ability from one room to the next. And it's great to be able to harness that and be able to actually watch each other work and learn from each other. And I suppose if you've put and invested the time in those relationships initially, you've introduced the start of a coaching culture, then people are going to be a lot happier about letting somebody in to watch them teach, especially if they know there's going to be opportunities for their own good practice to be recognised and, I suppose, celebrated. Sometimes we're not very good at celebrating our own successes.
No, we're not. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, so there's a perfect scenario where other schools could model that, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, when I first started coaching, I'll never forget that someone went back to the medical profession and said, you often see surgeons watching other surgeons operate. Why don't we do that in education?
It's a good question. A question we should all be asking ourselves in schools, because if we think about the talent in the next room and on down the corridor or out in the mobile classrooms across the playground, there's a lot of excellent work happening, and why not tap into that and learn from that? So that'll be really useful for our listeners. Janice, to round things up, what advice would you give to our listeners who are at the curious stage with regard to introducing coaching in their school? What are the most useful first steps they could take?
Wow. Okay. First steps. I think it's about doing a bit of research, really, around obviously coaching. Instructional coaching was the thing that for me, and around improvement. But it's working with your leadership team or whatever your group of leaders are, and looking at what would value add to your system or your school. It's also taking time to do that, taking time. And when you get a hook in on something, I know we say it all the time, but it's about building those relationships and making it very clear and transparent the why. The why you want to do this, and what does it look like, and how's it going to roll out, how it's going to be funded, who's going to be in positions. I think that's really important to make that very clear up front. And valuing people, being empathetic to every teacher, and every student, absolutely. I think it's important too, alongside any initiative, and we certainly did, and I don't know if I mentioned it, Richard, around the professional learning as well, that everyone is also can learn. And we did actually a professional learning community around a book study of Visible Literacy by Hattie Fisher and Frey. So I think it's important that professional learning is coming from somewhere. It's not about what Janice thought in her head. It was about looking at the research, research-based strategies, the research, and utilising that. And like you're saying, risk-taking and giving things a go. And not being scared, I suppose, to review. To say, okay, guys, this didn't quite work the way we wanted to. Let's look at a change to make this happen. Or moving into the next year, how can we make this better? The consultation of staff is really important, I believe. Not only initially when you're unpacking things and making things transparent, but at that review stage, getting everyone's input to that from students as well, students and staff, all the stakeholders review and feedback. I hope that helps anyone, but I certainly would encourage everyone to go on the coaching journey in some way. It's awesome to have someone alongside you as you learn.
Janice, it has been a real pleasure to chat to you today to hear about your coaching and education journey. Thank you for your honesty and openness as you shared your experiences over recent years. I have certainly been inspired hearing of how coaching has had such a positive impact on the teaching practice at McGregor State, and also to hear that pupil rating has benefited so much is also a real encouragement. I trust that your coaching journey continues to have an impact on your school community and beyond. For our listeners, I know that Janice's story will have clarified for many of you the true potential that coaching has, not just to impact classroom practice, but to raise pupil outcomes as well. If you're interested in finding out more about the work of Growth Coaching International, head across to their website at growthcoaching.com/AU and check out their feeds on the usual social media platforms. In the meantime, I'm going to pack up my microphone and hope that you will all join me on the next episode of our Coaching and Education series, where theory and good intentions meet reality.